Good evening, good morning, wherever you are in the world. It's the Nullify Take channel. We are back to talk about Australian Survivor Week 2, Episodes 4, 6. However you want to slice or dice it, you know, we're back to talk about it, dissect, review, talk about the highlights. And I thought it would only be fitting for me to introduce myself as King Chris of the Nullify Take, because on, you know, Australian Survivor, we've got our kings and queens, so I'm embracing it now. We've got King Chris, Queen Kahuna, Rebel Mucky, and Big Toe Tomac in the house tonight to break it down with you as well. For those who are catching the inside reference for Big Toe Tomac, well done. It means you are a true student of this game. But Rebel Mucky, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, it's getting a little hot in here, isn't it? Dun, 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 dun. Oh, hang on. Dun, 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 dun. I am here to start playing this podcast, my friends. I'm so excited. I've been waiting all week to talk about the series of these three episodes. I'm doing good, man. I'm doing really good.
Yeah, you look a little bit sunburned there, you know. What's happening?
Bro,
I'm getting hot in New Zealand.
Look, I'm white and it's the middle of summer, all right? You know, I just look at the sun and the cancer is starting to form on my skin, all right? There's no escaping.
No, hiding it. So, you look a bit orange, but more orange than usual.
Yeah. but what a week, Chris. You know, I'm so excited to break it down. I feel like it easily tops the first week. And yeah, a lot of juicy stuff.
Yeah, excited to talk to you about it. Big Toe Tomac, are you a fan of the Big Toe strategy in Survivor? Is that what it is?
Look, I just know I'm gonna dominate those big toe challenges out there, you know. I've got the skills. Balance. Yeah. But I want to address something actually really serious that happened this week. And
yeah, we're here for you, mate.
My boy Garrick has been crying all week. I was there, you know, like as he was crying for what Kirby did to him. And it's not okay. And I think Kirby should apologize.
You should apologize. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. Every single night. I mean, I love the cuddles, but the, you know, my ears not very nice, you know, all night long. Jeez, I mean, Garrick's a broken man right now.
Broken, mate. After what? How many days was it? Like 6 days in the game, 8 days in the game? And Kirby absolutely smashed his heart so early in the game. But
cried.
Yeah, go. He cried over it. Queen Kahuna, how are you doing?
That's me, being the queen that I am. Mucky's complexion, just another reason why he might ever never get on Survivor. They don't want to risk the cancer treatments that might come from being on an island for more than 24 hours.
Like, if he applied for Survivor US, I reckon if he applied for Survivor US, it would be the reason he does get casted on that season. But in Australian Survivor, I don't know if he's going to get onto the season because there hasn't been, I don't think. Who's the guy who won it before? Jeez, my memory is so bad. Cochrane. There's a bit of Cochrane on Australian Survivor as of yet.
No rang winners since Cochrane.
Ah. Yeah.
It's been, no, it's Tommy. Been a while. Isn't Tommy, it's Teacher Tommy, Tommy was a ringer.
Yeah, he Tommy. Was.
That's right. Yeah, there you go. True. There's a proud tradition there, Mucky. Keep it up.
Yeah,
exactly. But I wanted to say, as much as Garrick broke my heart, like Kirby, as much as I was singing her praises last week, not only Garrick, but Perez shedding tears as well, just cut so deep. And we see these strong, powerful men brought to absolute tears by a queen herself in Kirby. It's fascinating to see. What a week it was.
Wow. Jonathan coming in here with, geez, mate, wait to bring the mood down on this. It's taken a turn for the worse with that comment. But let's also say hello to Aaron. We've got Aaron here saying hello to everybody. The season Survivor has an amazing start. Really hope that this continues to be amazing all the way through until the end. Totally agree. Gabe, good to see you back here as well. Mucky, we get to like everyone in the UK Survivor. Oh, there we go. And then Andrew Lee coming in with the $10. Stick to the plan, Aussie style. A is for Alex, B is for Blindside. See you, the Cali Grenade Earthquake. There we go. Yeah, obviously stick to the plan towards the end of this week. Mucky, you were going to say something.
Well, all I've got to say is, you know, just bring up Gabe's comment here. Did you notice that Tom was upset that Garrick was crying, but not for the fact of the hardships that Kirby has been through? you know, once again, just what, have to what, have this hardship.
We're continuing this week. This is where we're going.
Kirby has the only hardship Kirby has is a fatal disease called big move-itis. Like, oh my goodness, just vote out a pleb for once. You have to vote out the best person every single night. Oh, yeah, honestly, I got things honestly to say about her.
Whoa, wait until we get into the Kirby chat tonight.
We all know how Tom feels about women.
Don't get me started on Eileen. Oh my gosh.
Oh no. You don't cross the line with Eileen, man. You don't cross the line.
wait.
Okay, let's get into it. We start the first episode off with a good old game of Twister. Kahuna, when's the last time that you played Twister with some friends?
I'm very good at spinning, and I'll call it out real left foot red. And that's the part that I play. Because I choose not to maim and or injure the people that are close to me, like both physically and like, you know, emotionally.
I wasn't surprised to see that Kelly was the one who called out that they had to play the game Twister on the island.
She just wanted to play with Alex. That's really what, and the pink Speedos is what she really wanted to play.
Yeah, very, very interesting start to the week. With that, we also start getting Aileen a little bit early on in this episode, starting to make an appearance, talking about the fact that, you know, she wants to make a move in this game. And obviously, we're going to see how that plays out throughout this episode towards the end when she tries to take a bit of control of the vote. First saying she wants to be in the background, but then later on becoming a bit more of an active player towards the end. So I'm going to be very interested to hear both takes because I feel like Big Toe Tom and Rebel Mucky is going to be on opposite sides of how that played out for her. But then we see on the Titan's tribe that there is a little bit of a fracture that is starting to happen when it comes to the middle-aged mafia. You know, there's definitely Mark who's in the middle. He's got allegiances with the V's. He's got allegiances with the middle-aged mafia. He seems to be in a very good spot early on in the week with both the V's getting most of that heat for their relationship with Mark and Caroline, specifically paying really close attention to the fact that both those girls seem to be also very close to Mark. Mucky, what did you think of, you know, that fracture in the Titans, tribe, and how Caroline approached it, not really giving the V's, any chance to just walk off and have a conversation without her following along?
Well, actually, there was a really great tweet that our lovely dear friend Annabelle from Australian Traders Season 2 had tweeted, which she said that it's very interesting watching, because she watched Week 2 first before Week 1, and it makes sense why Mark is more closer to the V's, because Mark, he really likes calm, stable people. And the second Eden had heard his name in Episode 2 that Jessica was throwing out, he was everywhere making like split vote plans, you know, he's going around being like, hey, have you heard my name's out? Hey, Jessica's talking to me. Like, he was so like sporadic and everywhere. And I think Mark potentially realized that and was like, that's not who I really want as an alliance member. I want people who are calm, who are going to be very logical and not like chaotic and everywhere. So I think that's sort of where that divide is really coming from. Mark potentially sees the V's as more of a calmer, more stable ship than the Mafia Alliance. But yeah, it was quite funny seeing Caroline literally at every conversation, like, like just like appearing out of nowhere, spying on them. Like, it really makes you think that if you're the V's, why not just target Caroline? Like, yeah, she may be your alliance, but if she can't leave you alone, like, why even trust her?
Yeah, 100%. It was just very interesting to see why she's so aggressive in this approach so early on. And it makes me wonder if Mark's doing a good enough job to explain to the middle-aged mafia, we need the V's, they need to be with us. If you see me talking to them, it's because we still need the numbers right now. It almost makes me feel, Tom, that he's not doing enough to keep the Carolines and the Kitties of this world comfortable with the fact that they need the numbers and that the V's very much form a part of that core group of numbers. You know, they're kind of like the pitch for me, if I was Mark, would have been, we're part of the inner layer and the V's are sort of the seasoning on top just for us to be able to get through the pre-merge phase. Do you feel like Marcus, potentially, we gave him a lot of praise last week, do you feel like he's maybe not managing those relationships correctly at this point, or is it just Caroline being extra paranoid?
I mean, you got to cut him a little slack. Who would you want to hang out with, a Russian supermodel or a rice Nazi? Pretty cut and dry when you put it that way. Or a guy with a really bad.
I like that you chose Valeria over Viola, because that's where I was like, I would hang out with Viola for sure, Muscle Mummy over the Russian supermodel.
Yeah, I think I like Valeria's personality more from what we've seen. Yeah,
I like both of them. I think they're both pretty attractive women, obviously, but I don't know if that is the thing that is sort of pushing Mark towards working with them more so than the middle age. I do think that Mucky brings up a great point that you want stability, you want someone that you can rely on strategically in the game, and you want to work with them. So again, my critique is just I feel like Mark's not doing enough to keep both sides of the alliance happy and working cohesively together. And maybe Caroline is just someone, it is a bit of a, we see her being very controlling over the food situation this whole week. So, you know, being a rice mafia or a rice Nazi, I think is what you said, Tom, you know, being that probably translate also in trying to have control of the game this early on. But we do move on to the Rebels camp as well. And in the Rebels camp at this point, we've got, Garrick talking about the fact that he catches criminals for a living. Kona, I know that's one of your favorite parts of Garrick's backstory. The fact that, you know, he makes sure people pay up when they're in store. You think that he gets emotional when he catches the criminals out there as well in the stores?
I don't think he's as emotionally invested and feeling betrayed by it. No, probably not. I'd like to imagine that he would if there's some poor person that's, you know, just stealing to put some food on the table kind of thing. Unless he works for some high-end luxury store, then I'm fine with whatever. But if he's at Woolworths and Coles and like stopping people from eating, then hopefully he gets a little bit emotional, you know? He's like, this is my job and it sucks, but I caught you. I'm very good at it.
In his intro package, he was at the reject shop, which so he's definitely only dealing with poor people.
Yeah, that's kind of...
I don't see any Titans shopping at the reject shop, if you catch my drift.
That's fair. We do get the whole thing about, you know, Kirby feeling good about the blind side. She's like, yeah, both sides, trust me, I did this great move, you know. She is the strategic player. She is thinking a couple of steps ahead, but she really did not take into consideration how Ferris would feel about this, how Garrick would feel, that other side of the alliance. She didn't let them in beforehand. So definitely some gaping holes in Kirby's game so early on. And we see Ferris now being kind of annoyed with Kirby, saying she is sneaky. But at this stage, he still does want to work with her. So there is still an element of, I don't like what she did here, but I'll let her slide this time. He still has a conversation with her, trying to mend sort of the fence and the bridge, or whatever. What's the word for that? The saying for it? Trying to make things right at this point, so early on. Mend fences, right? Yeah, not burn bridges. That's it. That's what I was trying to say. So trying to make things good early on here in the game. But Kirby, obviously, we know where she's going to go with her planning early on and where things are going to move, but they're still trying to make things work together. Probably the more interesting thing for me in this stage in the game is that we see Mucky, that Ferris finds this crate that is locked, something that later on in the game, he's going to get a key that's going to unlock the crate. He didn't have the big brain play like Mark did to just smash his way into the crate and just take the item.
Yeah,
you don't think Ferris is strong enough to do it?
Yeah. Oh, as soon as I say that, welcome Ferris, welcome.
He's calling you out for an arm wrestle. That's what I heard.
Yeah,
he's claiming that you wouldn't be able to beat him in an arm wrestle.
But when I watch Mark do that, if I'm production, I'm there thinking, wait, is he allowed to do that? Like, what a great moment for TV. But is he? Is he
They didn't state that he couldn't. There was no rule saying that he couldn't break his way into the chest.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but there's a thing called editing. They probably should have pulled it back and gone, yeah, there was no, but you're breaking game now. Like, let's put it back, edit. Like, let's fix
the crate back up. I think what happened personally, and we've got also Aileen in the chat as well. Aileen, welcome. You know, I think that probably they were also thinking to themselves, Ferris is not going to give that key. Like, Ferris is holding on to that key until he's on that beach so he can open it up himself.
Yeah.
So for the sake of drama, let's get Mark to break into this chest so that at least the key is available, or the idol is available, and we now have two idols in play on that side. I think that's what they probably were thinking when that happened.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Especially right before the swap as well. It's kind of like, hey, we kind of need this extra idol.
We need something to happen. Found.
Especially if Fierce doesn't get swapped to the Titans. It's like, well, great. No one's gonna get this idol.
Chris, I had a question. Yeah, that's what I was actually. Gabe ruined my joke. I was literally about to ask you, Chris, in a South African accent, if Mark is a diplomat and finds an idol, what power would that give him?
What do you mean? In a South African accent?
If he's a diplomat who finds an idol and gets immunity, he was also a diplomat.
I'm not gonna be good at this because my accent's faded. Diplomatic immunity.
Diplomatic immunity. I guess it's because you guys aren't old enough. If you're over 40 and you've seen Lethal Weapon 2, it's the first and only interaction I ever had with the South African accent, and it is so famous. That's why Gabe has quoted it here. The bad guy in Lethal Weapon 2, Chris, uses his diplomatic immunity to get away with things and says,
if you were South African, you had to have been a good guy.
Fake South African accent. In the 80s, I don't think they felt that way, mate.
Fair enough. So Charles and Aileen, both here, Smiling Assassin. We've got Charles as well. Welcome to the live as well. That's a South African twist, Gabe. Diplomatic immunity is something that they actually use in Survivor South Africa as well.
It's the funniest thing. People get that joke. The South African diplomatic immunity.
Went over my head. I don't want to talk about the reward challenge in this first episode as well. We had the wrestling taking place here where they were both on the podium there. How much would your big toe have helped you get through that challenge, Tom, if you were out there? What would the strategy have been? You had one of them defending, one of them attacking, and they had to hit, I think it was like a bell to score on each other out there. What would have been the strategy with your big toe? Do you reckon it would have helped?
I mean, I would have had like more grip on the ground. Like, I don't know. I think I'd probably just hide behind the person on the other. So if I'm on the red tribe, for example, I'd hide behind the blue attacker. So then the defender who's trying to defend me can't really get to me because there's all the other bodies in the way. And then I'll use like my agile, like monkey skills, big toe skills to, you know, go around everyone, you know, and you're just like, bing. Yeah,
that's what Kirby did. Kirby used the shepherd.
I'll give Kirby credit for my strategy. Oh, I see. You're all against me, honestly.
He's stealing Kirby's strategy. He saw it happen, and now he's claiming it as his strategy.
We've seen her bust out optimum game strategy in a challenge, like by using the shepherd with the other players, and then in the next challenge we see as well, like she threw
the other one was pretty cool.
Really interesting stuff there from Kirby. A professional athlete that focuses on strategy can work out how to play the best thing in the game. Funny that.
Yeah. Well, not only just an athlete, also a coach, right? So her brain obviously works in a different way to try and figure out these challenges. And Kirby's a bit of a secret weapon, I feel like, in the early stages here for the Rebels tribe when it comes to winning this challenge. But Tobias also has his moment in the sun because he is the final person to score. One thing that for me was very interesting, like always, we probably know that everybody had a shot at going out there and taking each other on, but we only see some of the matchups. We don't see all of the matchups. A lot of them didn't get an opportunity when there was also the question asked, who's going to sit out? So if someone's sitting out, you'd assume all of them had an opportunity to go up against each other here. And we saw certain people go out there multiple times as well. So it was very interesting to see how that sort of shook out. But ultimately, the reward is won by the Rebels. And this is where, you know, they've got the food platter with cheese and where Ferris finds that key to go and actually get the idol, which is gonna, you know, it's a shame Ferris didn't see Rebel your move in the beginning, but you kind of gave it away where he took his top off with the idol being at the bottom, being a bit of a showman about it.
I love it, right? I love, like, you know, if you're gonna play an idol, do it in style, right? You know, everyone goes, oh, I've got an idol, and they pull it out of their pocket, take a shirt off, take a jumper off, like whiplash it around, baby, you know, like, you got to do a style, man. You really got to like throw it to people's faces. Oh, you think you could take me out? Nah. You get what I mean? Like,
yeah, 100%. Really, you got it.
Yeah.
And it's hard. It's not hard. I guess it's a little bit hard to not talk about, you know, the fact that he finds an idol twice this week as well, and kind of gets forced to play the idol the first time because he knows there's potentially some heat that may come his way for him to be safe in the game. But outside of that, he also has a second idol, and he's going to play that very differently. I'm very interested to know how that's going to play out because, Tom, that's kind of playing on that edge of being you're a player that wants to create chaos, you're a player that wants to let the information be out there that you've got an idol. And he says that most Survivor players up until this point have got it wrong. Normally you keep it a secret. You don't tell people you've got an idol. He wants it to be out there, maybe to scare them off from putting all the votes on him in the next round. I'm not too sure. Do you like this strategy from him and sort of letting the information leak out when he finds the second one?
I do like the strategy with the second. Oh, I think for the first one, sorry, Ferris and Garrick, you know, my man. I don't know what you two are doing. Like when you get the flipping, when you get it, like walk away from the box. The editing, I don't know how long they were standing there, but honestly, but the second idol, I love his strategy.
Where was his watching skills then, by the way? Like, he wasn't catching any.
He wasn't catching any perpetrators.
Maybe if Raymond wasn't off of the butterflies and wandered off to the other group, like, how do you even do that? Like, he's like a 5-year-old that needs like a leash, you know, like the parent needs a leash to like bring their kid to like the shopping center. Honestly. Yeah. This is not Garrick's fault. This is Raymond's fault.
Go, what did we find? What did we find? What was it? And then Ferris is like, all right. And it's literally, he's like, it's literally the worst people that could ever find it. And he goes, all right, everyone quiet. And Kelly comes with like streamers and firecrackers. Like, everybody, we found something. Come around. Gather around, children.
Camp meeting. All right, Ferris, tell us. What did you find? What did you find, Ferris? Tell us all. And he tried. He tried to like, you know, get out of it by being, I found a key.
Best it's gotta be in there. Like, he couldn't. What could you do? Like, he's busted. Like, you can't do anything. Yeah. And I think just even trying to play it off that way was literally the best thing he could do. Like, you know, Alex picked up on it. People looking sideways, but he's got no moves in that situation. Like,
That was tough.
So, do you think it was intentional by Kelly that she had done that? Because there are definitely a couple of things.
Anything's intentional by Kelly. No.
I don't think Kelly knows her own strategy, like day to day, like it changes for her.
Her life is not intentional.
Because, you know, I had to jump far ahead, but she intentionally flipped her vote at the last minute to save Alex, right? So I think potentially if you're in this scenario where you've already got a lot of heat on you, like you've just caught someone with their pants down, right? Like, of course you'd be like, hey, you know, like lure everyone over.
So
like, don't you get what I mean?
Is this Mucky saying that, like what I'm picking up here is that you're trying to hint at maybe there's some genius mastermind playing 4D chess here and it's all a ruse to get us. Like, this is what you're saying. To carry on the tradition of psychologists doing incredibly well in recent times.
Yeah, I know.
And looking great.
Kelly doesn't have strategy
for what you're doing. All I can say is, you know, one of my boys, he works for a mental health institute here in New Zealand, and I've actually met a couple of psychologists, and they're very intelligent. And so I do think that Kelly, there is a chance that there is some strategy to what she's doing. Right, but you know, like it's an edited show, they're trying to portray in a specific way. But I do think there are some things that, like, there is an intention behind.
All I can say is reality TV is breaking my views on psychologists. Like, I would rather not go see a psychologist after the year that psychologists have had on reality TV with Traders Australia and now with Survivor. I feel like doing the opposite of what a psychologist tells you to do. And by the way, this is not professional advice to anybody listening to this. I'm not saying, you know, don't go and listen to your psychologist, but they're not choosing, I feel like, the most glued on psychologists, right? Tom?
I was going to say, I can't believe you're defending Kelly Mucky when she literally ruined your dream girl's plan in Ireland. Honestly, no? Like,
yeah, true.
Aren't you going to back your girl here?
Look, all right, I've got my long-lost mother, Kelly, and I've got, like, Queen Eileen, all right? Like, you know, you're on two opposing
sides
here.
Look at how red
that's sunburn.
That's my sunburn.
He's as red as his
shit. Is that a sunburn, or are you red for another reason?
No, no, it's my sunburn.
Oh, that's funny. That is so funny. I was just thinking to myself, who was Eileen partnered up with in this last challenge where she was leaning back again in that challenge? If Mucky was there, he would have been like, listen, I'll take the heat on this one. I will partner up with Eileen on this challenge.
This comment from Andre Lee, one of my favorite moments was, yes, I'm a huge fan of The Office, and she gave a Jim, like, staring at the camera, like, eye roll. Yes. Like, it was so quick and subtle, but she looked at the camera and went, like, it was like, they gave an eye roll to the camera right behind Kelly's head. It was brilliant.
Yeah, that was so funny.
Okay, well, we may as well talk about it. Let's talk about Eileen's plan to split the vote here. And we'll start off with Tom. I'll put Tom on the spot. He kind of started in the beginning of this episode saying he wasn't a big fan of Eileen's plan to split the vote so early on. Can you explain yourself, Tom? Like, why don't you like this plan?
Oh, look, to be honest, I got nothing against Eileen at all. It's just that I know how much Mucky loves her. What annoyed me was last week he put Eileen as one of his top five players of the week, and, like, she hadn't been shown at all. So, there was nothing to
very obvious.
I can,
yeah.
He also likes Charles as a winner pick.
Yeah. Well, Charles has got him back.
Poor Charles.
Well, because as a much better actor than Tom, with scripts you've got to read between the lines, right? And I read between the lines in week one. I saw how well Eileen was doing, and it played into week two, right? Like, tell me I was wrong. Tell me I was wrong, Chris.
Sorry, what was the question?
The reaction Rocky should get.
The what?
I was saying that you know, as a much better actor than Tom, you know, when it comes to scripts, you have to read in between the lines, right?
Yeah.
And I read in between the lines of week one that Eileen was doing really, really well, and all of you guys gave me a lot of shit for it, but it played into week two, right? You know, she's leading split votes. You know, she's part of
did every she, single did conversation. She ultimately lead the split vote, though, because it didn't actually happen. It ended up falling apart.
Kelly is so, like, how Kelly's hard is she to predict? Yeah. Like, you can't. Yeah.
But it was a good plan. It was a good plan to go for Alex and Tobias.
It's weird that it was like,
I like the fact that they wanted to get, I wanted to, I like the fact that they wanted to get Sarah to split the vote and be like, you're the one that needs to make the decision here. Would have worked out perfectly. They knew that Tobias was going to be safe in this moment. Yeah. Like, more than the plan itself, because it's foolproof. You don't know who's got an idol out there. You do need to split the vote. Any other season we come into, we're always critical of people not splitting the vote and being lazy and being like, oh, we're all just going to pile on one person. You know, it happens on the US all the time. And then one player pops out an idol. Surprise, my one vote is now the power to send someone home. So, you know, Eileen, if you're still in the life, well done. That is Survivor 101. You played it correctly. It was the right plan. You couldn't predict Hurricane, you know, Kelly coming in there and falling in love with Alex to a certain degree. They've got this love-hate relationship on the beach constantly, you know. Or, like, I feel like in Alex's case, it's more like, I really don't like you. And Kelly's like, oh, you know, treat them mean, keep them clean type of situation. And she's like thinking, nah, he actually does like me out there. And she ends up saving Alex in this moment. Yeah. Makes a solo move, which to me, I thought any other player, this is a death warrant going into the next episode. Yeah. You're going to be target number one because you went against the plan, you went against the grain, but somehow
she's got that social game.
She still walks in the next day and she is okay. People are like, well, that's all good. Like, I want to work with this unpredictable Kelly, because as long as she's in the game, players like Kirby believes that they'll kind of be able to hide behind Hurricane Kelly in the game. So it is an interesting game. Is she playing like a Philip Shepherd kind of role at this moment? I know, like, Philip Shepherd himself was a bit of an unpredictable force to a certain degree, and people just kept him along because they knew if he was going to get to the end, he's not going to win. Is that what's happening here, Kuna?
I don't know. I think she's definitely not a threat. And if she can be used as a number, then people will often keep those people around, right? Like, they're never going to win, but I can count them in my numbers. I think even with the move that Ole made on paper, great. But when Kelly is in that calculation, like, it's hard to you know, consider.
You can't blame Aileen for that. Like, there's no way you can blame
absolutely. But I will blame Aileen for just the previous vote. You know, Kirby and Reed did not vote with you. And then go to a split when it's so risky, like, you haven't even solidified anything yet at that point.
Well, you can't really blame her because you don't know the relationship between Aileen and Kirby and Reed because we haven't seen it. How can you blame Aileen for the producers not showing her game in the first three episodes? Like, to me, I get it from an editor. Seeing from the editor,
trust the alliance despite the vote, you mean?
Yeah, she could be a lot closer to them than what we know. And I mean, because even in the next episode, when they're starting to think about going after Ferris in the game, Aileen's being brought in by Kirby very early on in that conversation. So I feel like there is some sort of a social connection there that we're just not privy to. We're not seeing all of that happening in front of us. So I don't blame Aileen at all for trying to get them to be a part of it. Clearly they were all aligned.
It was a great plan, but like it was fraught with danger. And one of those is someone like Kelly, like the chaotic energy that you cannot predict. Yeah. And to go with a 4-4, if they had gone maybe with a 5-3, and taking the power away from Sarah and not entrust it to thing. But I don't know. Do you think the thing with Sarah was, because I've seen some people say online, and Eileen's here, so maybe she can clarify. I don't know if you've done so on social media at all.
I don't know if she's allowed to say too much. You know,
but some people are saying that the thing of making Sarah choose was meant to be almost like Nerisse with Olivia and Horacio on the challenge. Like, it was meant to be a heart-wrenching, mean thing. Whereas, I saw it like what you said. She was always going to pick Tobias. Should I pick? So it wasn't. But some people were saying that was a bit savage. It was a bit mean to put her in that difficult situation. But I'm looking at it like that wasn't a difficult situation at all, right?
No, I don't think so. I don't think it was a mean situation at all. I just think they knew where the vote was going to go and Alex was kind of targeted. But they also wanted Sarah to make that choice. It would have been a great TV moment.
Yeah. You give her a little power. Yeah, absolutely. I like that.
Yeah, same. So obviously, Tobias does end up going in this moment. We do lose him in this moment. And it doesn't look like he was someone that a lot of people necessarily wanted to target next. Alex was seen as the more strategic player, the bigger threat in the game. Tobias was just happy to be there, you know, and sit in camp, do the camp work. Didn't even put up a fight to try and stay in the game, Kuna.
Yeah, and in the exit thing, like at the end of the credits, he was like, I didn't see that coming. I was like, really? You didn't at all? Like, seeing as the person that you're close with was gone last thing, that you're in the absolute minority, you didn't see it coming in the slightest. And when Kelly came to talk to him, which made her flip her vote, he was like, nah, not interested in chatting, like, did not talk about strategy. There was nothing to it whatsoever. And then goes, I didn't see that coming. Like, wow. I don't know what he saw coming then.
Disappointed when I see this kind of comment, like, you know, Philip Schiphol or Christy Bennett. Christy Bennett, like, to compare champion. Kelly to Christy Bennett, that's a cold take in my opinion. Like, Christy Bennett's won the game. I know she's not respected by Tom and by a lot of fans as a winner because, you know, first female winner of Australian Survivor.
Are you saying
am that? I lying? Am I lying, Tom?
I just don't think she did anything but a good speech at the end and nothing else.
I'm on with Tom on that.
Like, I do listen. I don't think Christy Bennett's like, and again, I don't want to completely go off topic here. I just think to make that stretch with Philip Shepherd, who clearly didn't know what he kind of knew what he was doing, but he wasn't playing to win. Christy Bennett played to win, which is why she won. The best player always wins at the end. And she had one of the best final tribal council performances ever, right? So that can be undisputed. She said what needed to be said, and Lee dropped the ball, which allowed the opening for her to win the game. I don't think she controlled the pace of the game throughout the season. Was she one of the most dominant winners? No, but there was a lot of subtlety in her game that I just feel like fans look over it. They don't respect her game, which disappoints me. Like, I'm not saying, I'm not making a case to say she's the best winner ever, but to me, like, I feel like to say, oh, Philip Shepherd, Christy Bennett, and Kelly all in the same sentence is so disrespectful to Christy Bennett. Like, that to me just doesn't, and it's not having a go at you, Jonathan. I understand it's all in love, but I just don't want that to be a thing, you know?
Yeah. Can I say one thing we should all agree on is, like, out of the people who have been booted so far, it's sad that Tobias has probably played the best game by, like, a landslide out of any of the boots. Would you guys agree with that?
Tobias, like, what? Out of all the people that have been voted up until this point, voted out?
Yeah. Like Frankie, Jess, Nathan, oh my gosh. To be that, like buff and everything, and to be voted out this early, you have to do everything wrong in your entire life.
Same as Tobias, right? Tobias was the Nathan of the Rebels.
No, but Tobias didn't really do anything wrong to, like, he did. Like, he joined the minority of, like, people who
had the exact same thing. It's Nathan, Jaden, and Winner on one side.
Oh, Nathan was so much worse. Let's be real. Like, the things he was saying, oh, yeah, if you guys come, we'll carry you, yeah. Oh, like, all that kind of stuff. And just all he would do is spend time in the water. Like, he would just, like, be washing himself all day. Like, I reckon he was the cleanest guy there.
Oh, and according to Caroline, he ate a lot, too. Like, that was a... That's a signature on the death warrant there as well, according to Sweet Karen.
Food, please.
Yeah. Yeah, so we spoke a little bit about the aftermath. We spoke a little bit about Kelly just being okay. Her trying to, like, justify to Sarah why she made the move and why wouldn't understand why, but she just one has this big heart. And she just looked out for Sarah in this moment. And one day this will make sense. Like, it was so bizarre to see that speech from Kelly. Yeah.
Well, don't forget from Charles, what breaks our heart today is merely a ripple in the ocean of life, adversity for years ahead. Like, it was such...
you know the old poem? That old quote that everyone knows?
Quote. But, like, I love how she said, oh, it's just like the old poem. Oh,
I like in the edit, like, they show Scott just laugh in the confessional. Yeah. Like, he just... Like, he couldn't help it. It was perfect. He's staring at him like, are you saying this in real life? Like, so good.
And in that moment, when she's having a moment, she's not, like, it's not Kelly's moment. It's Sarah. Let her have a moment. Yeah. Let her have a cry. Let her get things out of her system. It's her birthday. She's having the worst starts to one of her birthdays ever. And you've got to come in with that line. That, to me, was just quite laughable, to be honest. But, you know, it's one of those things that is what it is. Again, we see this, you know, Alex knows he just got saved. Kelly going over to him saying, you know, I saved you. You now owe me. She had that kind of conversation. Alex is like hell I do. Like, I'm going to go wherever the wind blows me in this moment. And the wind blows him straight to Ferris, not Kirby in this moment. Tom, are you surprised that he sort of chose Ferris in this battle between Ferris and Kirby so early on? What do you think made him go that way? I feel like Kirby got a little bit of the flack for the move against Tobias and him.
Well, that's the problem. Like, with that's the problem with Kirby's initial move. Like, she went out of her way to create stronger bonds with the minority. So then, when she turns on the minority, they get more pissed at her than, like, I'd be more pissed off at the person who only just betrayed me, as opposed to people like who I always knew were against me. Like, I can't really be mad at those people. So I honestly think Kirby's playing. Like, every single day is the final day before the final tribal, and she needs to get that one last thing on her resume. It's like, calm down. Like, there's no way. If Kirby makes it to the end, this cast is poo.
Is Kirby the Simon of this season? You know, because Simon went out guns blazing, feeling like he needed to get rid of George immediately.
Much more confident, much better.
Yeah. She can actually do. She can actually do things though. Like, you know. So, you know.
Well,
What do you mean she can actually do things? Simon was really competent in the challenges as well.
But like Simon couldn't make a move to save his life. He couldn't tell the difference between a cookie and an idol. hopeless. But I love Simon. He's one of my favorite players. You go.
The thing with Kirby, like, because I was wondering why, like, the back and forth, the ultimately the turning on Ferez so early, like you said, big move-itis that she's just swinging for the fences so hard, which I, look, on one level, I really respect because I believe she's not
a fan, like she's a recruit and doesn't know. And the fact that she's coming without knowing about the game and is swinging like this is pretty insane. If she actually was a fan, what she could do would be really impressive. But I feel like when I was watching it, like, I don't know if it was just me, but I kind of got a little bit of an epiphany. Tom, when you mentioned Garrett crying and he confronted her, I saw this look on her face where it was like, oh shit, like, I think I'm in trouble now. Like, that's going to come back to me. And I feel like that was the start of the, like, what do I made the wrong move. And that was like, they're going to turn on me. So I have to take shots at Ferris first because I know they're not happy with me. And, you know, I need to get back on their side. So she swung against Alex, or had already the paranoia about Ferris. And I'm wondering if that was like the spiral by just that one first move is all these recovery moves trying to make up for that mistake at the start. You know what I mean?
I think I think what happened is also she got a little bit of power. She got some people who wanted to move with her. She started realizing, oh, wow, I'm good at convincing people. And it went to her head maybe a little bit too soon in the game. And she's now trying to make these big moves. Like Gabe said here, Kirby said in the beginning, she wanted to play silently. If this is her silent mode, it's crazy. What is she going to be like when she actually comes to play, when she's turning it up? Like, I feel like, you know, it's going to be next level. She's going to make Hurricane Kelly look like she's a tame player in the game when she starts playing more aggressively than what she has been playing so far. It'll be very, very interesting. But, you know, it's interesting to see Kirby go down this direction so early on and choose a side here that she wants to go up against. But will she ultimately, if Kirby or Ferris wins this battle, which to me, I feel like the editor's telling us Ferris is going to get out on top. That's kind of where it's leaning for me. If Ferris gets to the end and he wins this game, maybe Kirby is seeing something here that other people are blind to at the moment, which is the huge threat that someone like Ferris is in the game because he's such a bold player. He's a smart player. Clearly, the edit is at least making us believe that these are the two power players in that game right now. And a lot of the times, this is not new. You can't have two alphas on the same tribe trying to take control. One of them's got to go. I look back at Heroes versus Villains when you had Boston Rob and Russell Hans in the Villains tribe together. Mm. One of those two players had to go. And it happened in that season that Rob was the one that ended up going early, Tom. So is it maybe history repeating itself here to a certain degree?
Well, the thing is, Ferris was happy to work with Kirby. Like she turned on him. And I think if I was in this season, I would recognize how much of a chaotic distraction Ferris is and go, bam, I want him. I want to take him like at least the final eight, final seven. He's just going to be, there's no way people could look at me when Ferris is there at the same time. He's out front. Yeah, I was going to make sure he doesn't turn on me. Yeah,
and this is a good call. It's a good call because Gabe earlier said that he disagrees with me, not you, about the best player doesn't always win. Basically, it's the best player off the options that are there at the end. Well, you kind of bring up something that I think a lot of people forget. To be the best player, you have to be a complete player and you have to be good at managing your threat level, which is a key thing to getting to the end. So if you're taken out before the end, you messed up as a player. Somewhere down the line, you became too big of a threat. You played too hard. People noticed you, and they said, we need to take you out at this point. And the two players who gets to the end, a lot of the times, are the two players who knows how to get like a Ferris in front of them, how to create a shield in front of them that's going to allow for them to have more leeway to get towards the end. So I hear what you're saying. There are some phenomenal players that have never won the game. But to be truly called one of the best, you have to win, in my opinion. Like, you have to prove that you have got it in you to actually take a championship kahuna.
Yeah, absolutely. And Ferris has got that, and I think Kirby does too. And even from that perspective, wouldn't you want to be like, I can either have him aiming at me and start a war with someone who I would probably see as the most competent, dangerous person in the game, and I'm going to start a war directly with them so that they come back at me this early without the number solidified, going into swaps, who knows what's coming up. Like, it's so risky. Like, she throws for the fences so hard. Like, risk to reward ratio is so, like, actually, I don't even know what the reward is on some of those moves that she's making. Like, by doing there's been zero benefit except for backlash from the splitting the vote in the first instance by staying on the Alex side. Like you said, Tom had actually rebounded harder by him being more hurt by someone who's supposed to be on this side. So no benefit from that. No benefit from switching back again, put them offside even more, and then targeting Ferris and it becoming open is potentially downfall. Like, it's, there's zero benefit for any of the risks that she's taking. It's massive and entertaining on TV, but dangerous for her game.
So I've got a bit of a hot take. I do want to move into the reward challenge and keep the conversation moving here. But, you know, I've got a little bit of a hot take on the challenges this season because I find myself constantly being gravitated towards the reward challenges. Are the reward challenges just more fun compared to the actual immunity challenges, which seem like all of the challenges on Australian Survivor firstly is good compared to Survivor US? They're definitely, it was very evident this week, Kahuna, you brought it up last week, that they put a lot more effort into their challenges. And we sometimes give US Survivor a pass when we talk about it now because we compare it against the challenge, which is even another level when it comes to daily missions and things like that. But we kind of give it a pass where we say, well, they're on an island. There's only that many variations of things that they can do. But they bring back a very old school challenge here in this reward where previously we've seen them on a pole with an idol on it and they have to slap it off. But this time they've got a chain connected with the idols being on the back and they have to like work out a way where they can grab it off the other person. Kuna, what did you think of this challenge? Because I thought it was a really cool variation of something that we've seen in the past and it kind of forced people to come up with new strategies. Again, Kirby with excellent strategy and sort of sacrificing one of her idols on the pole to her left to try and get the one from whoever she was going up against at that point and then pulling the other one. I think Viola. It might have even been Viola that she was up against.
Viola,
you would have thought Viola would be pretty solid there, beating her, outsmarting her. What did you think of this challenge? And do you agree the reward challenges, where they go head-to-head, seems to be some of the more fun challenges out there?
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that I'm really loving about, and what we can, it kind of adds to our argument, Chris, about US Survivor, is that we've got in this season a Raymond and a Charles and an Eden, and but they go up against each other. Like, so far we haven't seen Raymond have to wrestle Jaden, which I kind of would love to see.
<That'd be great. laughs>
You know what I mean? But it shows the potential that those matchups can happen even with the US nerd casting. They can still do this kind of stuff, right? There's innovation that can be done. You can be physical without dangerous. Like, by, you don't have to have the wrestling in the mud. You can do a rope thing where there's strategy involved and a little bit of, you know, learning from what one person does to the next and seeing what works best. And like, I remember when Kirby did that amazing thing by pulling that Viola off and getting all that. And then later, I think it was Tobias was saying, I was thinking about your move and you can't beat it. It can be done over and over again. And I was like, can it? And then in my head, I started breaking it down. I go, yes, you can. You can counter that. And there's so many little things and strategies and ways to think about it, which we just don't see when it's run an obstacle and finish a puzzle, you know?
Yeah. You just don't see it in the same way. You don't see those head-to-head battles, which I really do enjoy. And I'm glad that we do at least have that in the reward challenges. This one gave us classic matchups, which I know Tom would have been on the edge of his seat when Charles and Raymond was out there going up against each other. Tell us, Tom, how real was the excitement at home when you were watching that one?
Okay, I'm actually not going to lie. I think my dad and I, our favorite player at the moment is Raymond. We just find him so much fun just to laugh at. Like in the dodgeball challenge, he's up there and he's got his hands behind his back and then someone throws the ball at him and he gets hit, of course, and he's just smiling. And I'm thinking, oh, Raymond, you know you're not meant to get hit by the ball, right? Like, I think Jonathan has to, like, tell him things twice. He's streets behind everyone else, but he's just, honestly, like the edit is doing so much to, like, make fun of Raymond, and I'm here for it. Every time Raymond's on TV, I'm having the best time of my life.
He doesn't even, like, has he had a single confessional yet? Like, I feel like we haven't seen him in a confessional yet.
He's had, like, one, I think.
And that was in the opening, yeah.
Doesn't need it.
It's just like, that smile on his face. He's just like, and also giving his shirt to Kelly, like, it's just so funny seeing Kelly with, like, this gamer shirt on all the time.
Yeah. I'd love to see Kahuna and Corey in a hall brawl. Here we go again. The hall brawl legend lives on, Kahuna. You're still being called out for that one. We're going to have to make it happen. Kitty is the only one without a confessional. That is so strange because Kitty, I've got a friend, right, who does not watch Survivor at all in New Zealand, but she's real into health and fitness stuff. And she follows Kitty on socials for her health and fitness stuff that she does and nutrition. And apparently Kitty is like a big deal on social media. And she's constantly asked me, how's Kitty doing? Is she like really good in this season? And I'm like, I don't know. She's kind of in a solid alliance, but outside of that, she seems like a nice lady. I just don't know how she's doing. Like it's so weird to me that they don't capitalize on someone that's got a following outside of the game and at least give them a couple of confessionals. Like what did Kitty do, Mucky, to piss off the producers this season?
Well, okay, there's something I've been wanting to bring up, right? Because this whole confessional thing with Strange Survivor is bullshit, right? You know, I just want to say that, you know, straight away. Because the thing about Strange Survivor, their screen time is so much more different than the other Survivors. It's not based
on... Yeah, so much longer.
Yeah, so much longer, right? Like, one confessional literally lasts, like, 5 to 8 minutes, right? And how screen time works as well is that by actually physically seeing them talking around camp. Like, with Jaden... How many confessionals has he actually had and how much have we actually seen him on our screen? So I feel like each week, like we see Jaden a lot, but we never actually get a confessional from him. If that's what makes sense. So similar to Nathan, he doesn't actually get many one-on-one confessionals, but he's just always there around, like talking to other people. So we always sort of see what his thoughts are and stuff. And so, yeah, when it comes to like,
That's my problem. That's my problem with like, and again, I'm not going to go down, like, there's a lot of good stuff. Like 90% of what Australian Survivor is doing is great. I have to admit it's a better product than Survivor US at this point. I mean, it's hard to argue against that because Survivor US at the moment is on fumes, but you know, my problem really, when you look at this, Kitty and Charles is a duo. Charles is another guy. Like we had him jump in live. I don't know if he's still listening to us at the moment where, I'd love to know more about what Charles is thinking in the game because you know that guy is strategic. You know he's smart.
He's the world's greatest litigator.
Yeah, but this is the problem, though. Not giving Kitty any airtime, not giving Charles any airtime. Now, there is no doubt in my mind that both of them don't have a chance of winning. And that's one thing that the US Survivor, if I can give them one thing they're doing better, Kahuna, and you can relate to this because you watched the whole season last season with me, it took a very long time to decipher who was going to win that season. Last season was very well edited. It was extremely balanced. We were deep into the merge where so many people could still have won that season at that point. We have had our suspicions, but over here, we now know Kitty and Charles, like, no chance. Like, they're just not getting content. If they're the winner, having 6 episodes in a row where we don't hear from them, chances are slim right here, Kahuna, that they're going to take the season out.
Yeah. Like, to be fair, though, that happens in the US Survivor as well. Like, we get they don't have their superstars as early as Australia. Like, we've already seen, anyone who's watched this 2 weeks, we go, Ferris, Kirby, Mark, you know, like, you know who's kind of pulling the strings and making moves, and that's because that's what they feed us. But that's not to say in the US version there aren't absolute flops, you know, that aren't going to win as well. Like, they get people that on the opposite end of this. They might not get as many people on the positive end of the spectrum where they're pushing the people that we need to care about, but they have just as many nothings. Like, you know what I mean? Like, at the bottom,
I don't think there's many. I think I would agree with you. There are an element of people who don't have a chance of winning, but I don't agree with you that they have just as many. I think that is the difference. The balance.
Well,
is
we got 24. We got a bigger cast to. There's much more fodder at the tail end, you know.
Yeah, and I do think that they're trying. They're trying really badly. Eden had a really good start last week. He's someone, Tom. I know you're on the Eden watch. You were very impressed by his scramble last week. What did you think of Eden's performance throughout this week? Because we didn't get much of confessionals from him either this week. Like, he kind of faded back into the background.
Well, yeah, I like the fact they show us. I think the mentality should be showing us who's important to what's happening any given time. Yeah. And then whenever there's like just a generic confessional that literally anyone can mention, it's just whoever does it the most like entertaining way. You know, like if three people talk about the same reward, you pick the person who talked about the reward the most interestingly. Yeah. I think that way it would actually make it so much harder to pick a winner because they're just doing what's the most interesting, as opposed to, well, I got to make sure I got to show D this much, you know, to in each episode, so people know she's going to win or whatever.
Anyway. Yeah, I think I just want to pull up with this. Liz had one confessional from Jonathan Gray. That is a good point, but Liz had George on the same season, on the same tribe. It makes sense why she had one confessional up until this point. I don't think we should be looking at Liz as like what the classic winner's edit will look like on Australian Survivor. I think Liz is an anomaly because she played with returning players in her season. I wouldn't be surprised if they, because it was a little bit of a shock seeing Liz win last season, so I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to do that twice. I do think that two characters in the game that I like how their edit is progressing currently is the two Vs, because we kind of knew that they were on the screen last week, but they didn't do anything of significance. Now that they're starting to get a little bit more involved in the strategy, we see the trial of both of them working with Mark. We know Mark is going to be a big player in the game. I feel like the deeper Mark goes in the game, the higher the likelihood is that we see these two go deep in the game as well. And there's a lot of focus on their duo and now their relationship here with Mark in the game as well. So I can see a lot of I was thinking to myself this week, could we have two Russian blondes winning back to back? Like, I just have this feeling about Valeria. She's someone that I would keep my eye on for multiple reasons, Kahuna, in the game at this point.
Yeah, I mean, so far I can't see her. I see her going deep because of her relationship with Mark and V, but not because of anything that she's going to be doing off her own bat. That's the kind of vibe I'm getting. She'll be there for the ride, and if she decides at the right moment to turn on Mark, then absolutely that can be a thing with her and V, like turning on the person that brought him there kind of thing is always a big move. But I see Mark as the real power there. And you mentioned before, like, the middle-aged mafia versus the two Vs and being in the middle, having to manage both. Like, I looked at Mark, and in the preseason when we were sort of looking at him, and I said the bald thing, the diplomat, he's very professional, carries himself well, he fits well with that middle-aged mafia. But then I, like, realized he's only 35, and there was this shot that he had where he's wearing his hat with the two Vs, and I was like, he's 35. He's not like a middle-aged mafia. He's just a young 35-year-old dude who wants to hang out with the two pretty girls. You know what I mean? Like, he's a dude. He's not, but just because he's carries himself well, he's smart, he's professional, he has to be with the older guys, he's not there yet. You know what I mean? Like,
that's a good observation.
He's in between, yeah.
Yeah.
I want to go to Mucky for this next one, because in this immunity challenge, you know, that they had to do, they had to, you know, go through this obstacle course. They had to collect planks. And then this is the one where Kelly was like adamant. She's got the balance like Debbie, you know, like it rang game changers with her saying, I can do the balance better than anyone else. I've got a low center of gravity. Absolutely flop. But one thing that I was very interested, as someone who knows how to bust nut after nut, do you think that Nathan's strategy at the end when he was throwing those coconuts,
whacking away at your logs,
did you appreciate him busting nut after nut out there? Do you think that he had the right strategy, because he ended up pulling it out? Would you be able to step up to the occasion on the big stage?
Well, yeah, I agree with Kahuna. JLP, like, you know, we talk about, you know, Australian Survivor and American Survivor. JLP makes challenges way more fun in Australian Survivor. So with all these different sexual references. But yeah, I liked how Nathan was busting nut after nut. You know, he whacked at that log really, really well. And he proved why he was a challenge beast. He did a good job.
I'm not going to lie. When this moment happened on screen, I was besides myself. I had to like stop with JLP. Like, JLP has to know what he's doing with these things. Like, it must have become an inside joke when he's
challenged now.
Yeah. But yeah, it's so funny though with Kelly though, right? It's like, you know, she's actively putting herself out into these roles and is doing really bad with them. And then the one time that actually want her to do that, you know, not to jump too far ahead, is when she has to like throw the challenge for the Titans and she sits herself out.
We'll talk about that. We'll talk about it. It's fine. What did you guys think of this? Like, she ends up obviously getting voted out by the end of this episode, goes to the other tribe, and then has one thing to do. And then the worst thing of all is, it's okay, like, own the fact that you did that, but at least take some credit at the tribal council when you're leaving. Don't be like, oh, I loved you guys, you know, see you later. Be like, listen, my mission was to sabotage you, and I chose not to do so because I like all of you guys. If we do get into the game later on, let's think of a way to work together, because I could have been that person, but I wasn't, right? So she gets no, like, her tribe doesn't trust her now, and the Titans are like, what was her mission? What did she do over here that she can go home? We don't know what the mission was that she just completed. Did she just steal her, like, did she do something? Did she give an advantage to someone in the game? Like, immediately I would be thinking that there's more to this mission that she never explained, Tom. Like, Kelly is so confusing. Like, if she was intentionally good at this game, surely she would have said something at this point when she was leaving to go back to the Rebels camp.
Maybe she actually is saying some really genius things, and they got a professional voice actress to, like, dub over her with just stupid stuff. That would be a good explanation as to what's going on right now. I have no other possible explanations other than she's really bad at this game.
Yeah, I don't know. Very, very weird gameplay by her there. I do want to go back to this episode here, where obviously they lose this challenge. They go back now, and this is where there's going to be Kirby feeling like she needs to pull the trigger. They got to go after Firas in the game. You've got Firas finding out via Alex. Alex actually lets him in on this, and this is where he chooses to choose a side in the game. He chooses to get them to turn this alliance against Kirby, basically, by voting for Rhee. Yeah. Did you find, Mucky, that it was interesting that we see this happening in Survivor all the time? You've got a target in place, but somehow you're not going for the obvious target. You're going for their right-hand person. What is the strategy here? Because I am confused by Firas not taking a hit directly at the person that he feels threatened by in the game that clearly has more pull in the game than Rhee. Yeah. Like, why go after Rhee? She doesn't look like she's the mastermind. She doesn't look like she's whipping up the votes against them. Make it make sense to me, because, you know, with a player as sporadic as Firas, we need a rebel as sporadic as yourself to understand the game.
Well, I feel like there are two different things about this. The first one being, how good is, like, how good socially has Kirby, like, insulated herself into the tribe, right? Like, we see she's having all these different conversations, and I do have some inside information about that vote as well, which we'll get into in a second. And I just think that there's a strong chance that maybe she's just so well liked. Like, we would see Scott in the next episode telling her what the plan was, right? I think maybe it's harder to go for Kirby at that point, but it's just much more easier going for Rihanna. And then the other side to that is, you know, sometimes, because I love doing this all the time, right? Where I sort of love proving to people that, like, hey, I got you. You get what I mean? Like, I got you. I figured you out and I got you. And I took out your best friend and now you're stuck on the bottom. Like, because when you think about this whole rivalry.
Yeah, I mean, it's great to have rivals in the game that's going to come for you later on. Yeah, 100%.
Because, no, hear me out, right?
So that you can stick it in their face. Like, I got you and you're still here, but you can't do anything about it. Psych, until you get into a tribe swap.
Now, hear me out, right? Because, like, Firas really wanted to work with Kirby, right? Like, we've always seen that. And at every point, Kirby has made Firas feel so uncomfortable, right? You know, obviously she did her split thing at the first trouble they went to, which that put so much doubt into Firas's mind that he had to play his idol. Like, people were saying that, oh, he wasted an idol. I don't think so, because when you're in that situation, how can you fully trust Kirby and Rihanna at that stage? Obviously, Firas then hears from Alex that, once again, that Kirby's coming after him. So it's kind of like he's tried so many times to work with her and she's just not doing it. Kind of that point, if I was Firas, I'd be like, hey, I'm going to take out your number one ally.
Yeah.
So then you know that, like, I'm on to you. I've got you. And, you know, obviously if Firas still does want to work with Kirby, maybe something can happen then, since
I like Gabe's explanation a bit better than this. I don't think Firas would have kept her in the game if it wasn't for people like Scott and Aileen potentially being very close to her in the game. And he probably... just knew he didn't have the social capital to make that move. But Ree maybe not being as social with someone that people were willing to let go of this early in the game, because we sometimes forget that some of these players who don't have the biggest confessional, they still have an opinion. They still have strategy talk. We just don't, we're not privy to all of that conversation happening in between the tribal council. But we do get to the tribal council. And this is another point here, Tom. I nearly called you Toe. Tom, where, you know, Kirby makes it apparent, like, I don't trust Ferris. I don't want him to go to the tribe. We're now voting someone into the other tribe. It can't be Ferris. And she's vocal about that at tribal council. So she's not even hiding the fact anymore that she's gunning for Ferris. It is public knowledge at this stage, the way that that tribal council sort of plays out.
Well, Kirby, you know, you could have trusted Ferris if you didn't turn on him. I mean, he wanted to work with you. And also, then that way you could have sent one of your allies over to the other tribe to get an idol to then bring back to your tribe that you could then use because he's one of your alliance members. Oh, isn't that funny how that works, Kirby? Yeah, that's how you play the game, you potato. No, sorry. I just don't like
Tom being the misogynist once again.
Well, I was going to say before... I was going to say before, Mucky... like said, he has like an inside source about like that tribal. And I'm thinking, what? Is it your girlfriend Eileen or Sneaky Steve?
Oh my God.
Was Sneaky Steve in the background the whole time?
Eileen is not responding to any of Mucky's DMs. I'm telling you that now. We scared her off on this podcast as soon as he DMs again.
The sun is just right here, guys. Gosh, this is horrible.
Chris, we didn't scare her off. We saved her.
Exactly. We did the Lord's work. That's what we did.
You're missing out on the Mucky Home experience.
I'm going to heaven for this, you know. Like I saved a life.
You did your good deed. You did more than your good deed for the month. You did a couple of good deeds for the month by this week. Yeah, I like that take. No, so Tom's who is this inside source, Mucky? Like, are you allowed to tell us about this inside source? Voices in your head, or is this actually a thing?
the demons told me so. No, it's Well, I don't want to accidentally get them in trouble, but
you don't have to get people in trouble.
But it seemed like Rihanna was going to go at that tribal. So Eileen was with Ferris in that vote, and it does seem like Scott was also with Ferris on that vote, because we do see Scott, you know, sort of telling Kirby around in the next episode as well, that like, that would have been like a big shock of Rihanna, you know, was the guy.
That makes Scott sort of gameplay going into this next episode so confusing when he tells Kirby that, you know, Ree was targeted, and it's almost like he second guessed himself in this next episode. And he was like, maybe we should have gone in a different direction here, and I should be working with Kirby. So again, Ferris doesn't have full control of Scott and maybe Eileen at this point, and they're still weighing up their options of where they want to go, who they want to work with. And they get a second shot at it, but interesting to see, you know, Kelly going when she's trying everything in her power at this tribal council, not to be the one to be sent to Huda. Kahuna, they're like, Smiling Assassin seems to be the guy for it, but would there ever have been a better choice, like, in that tribe? Like, you have to send Hurricane Kelly over there. The hindsight of this, though, knowing what happened when Kelly did go there, she was terrible about lying in the cover story, and she did end up giving a lot of secrets away about the alliances and who's working with who, maybe putting the final nail in Nathan's coffin without knowing it by saying that Alex and him would bro out if they were to get together at a merge situation. But yeah, like, clearly just not aware. Not subtle in her approach. Did we expect anything else, I guess?
I don't know I honestly don't know if they were expecting anything. I think they were just like, let's just send her. Because the risk of sending someone else, if they send someone from Ferez's alliance, it could be bad for them. If Ferez's side sends someone from Kirby's alliance, it could be bad for them. And at least they get a break. Alex was like, send her. Yep, that's fine. Get her away from me. Like, I think that was... I'm wondering if that was maybe the bigger motivating factor, just to have her leave for a few days, at least just to breathe. I have no idea. Like,
Can we just talk about how she came into that?
Rebels are coming.
Yeah.
Rebels are here. Hello. Everybody's sleeping. I'm like, what are you doing? And
I would have done like, that.
I know you're like, that's why we all think you'll be a first boot.
I'm like, have you guys heard the tale of Bigfoot?
She's still somehow there, so maybe that strategy will work. But I just thought it was so inconsiderate the way she came in there. Andrew Lee saying, Raymond's voting shout-out reminded me of Australia's first iconic TV voting nomination shout-out in Big Brother Australia 10 back in 2013. Did you get that, Tully? Shout-out by Tim Dormer. Tim was the winner, I believe, of that season, actually. I never watched that season. To be honest, I've only watched one Big Brother Australia season ever, but it kind of reminded me of Sugar shouting out Randy's name as she was voting for Randy about being a grumpy old man or something like that. I can't remember the exact words that she used back in Gabon. This season does have some Gabon vibes to it to a certain degree as well, Tom. Like, I get real Gabon vibes, right?
And that's one of my favorite seasons of all time. I love it.
Yeah. I'm the same. Why does it get so much hate out there in the public? Like, I love sloppy gameplay. I love people who don't know really what they're doing out there. It's fun. Yeah. It's entertaining.
It's great.
Must be One World fans that hate Gabon.
Yeah, yeah. Crystal. Yeah, Crystal. Wait, is that it? Crystal Cox?
Yeah, Crystal.
Yeah,
Crystal
Cox. Yeah, it's like, I've had it up to here with you. Oh, I was forget like, you. Goodbye. Go home. And I was also thinking of Ziggy in season 2 of Australian Survivor. It's like, Annalise, I'm voting at you tonight. You know, yeah, just keep our alliance strong. And Annalise is just...
I mean, I think my favorite moment, which obviously didn't have the same intention as Crystal and Ziggy, was when the very first time Luke ever casted a vote, which is the first episode of season 2, he shouts, "Oi, how do you spell Henry?"
That's so good.
great moments. So we obviously get Ferris here. We've spoken a little about the fact that he gets another idol here. We've spoken about the fact that Mark broke the box to get his idol. So it's going to be interesting to see how all of that is going to play out. I will say one thing, though. This would have been the reward challenge if there was ever a reward challenge. I normally, the party mix doesn't do it for me, really. I don't care about sweets when I'm out there. But
the saucy rolls, though.
Coffee. Like, after not having coffee for so long. Mate, I have at least 4 cups of coffee a day. Like, this would be the hardest thing for me to quit.
Well, clearly natural selection doesn't like you very much. Like, if you're addicted to coffee, like, go to rehab. That's all I'm saying. Like, seriously.
Listen.
Useless.
I can quit anytime.
Tomorrow.
I can stop tomorrow if I want to. I may just be talking to a rock that I will pretend is like an iPhone. Yeah.
You're going to be like Shane. you're going to go in a reward challenge. You're going to see someone drinking coffee and you're going to like trade something for it just to have one little sip, you know?
Yeah. Trade like my socks or something or my shoes and just go barefoot for the rest of the... Well, an Australian Survivor would be all right because I probably have like an extra pair of sneakers in any case. You get like 3 pairs of clothing, don't you? So you're right.
Will you be the first survivor to attack a crew member to get their coffee?
No, I would not attack it, but I may try and steal coffee. I've heard stories about survivor players going out there and stealing food from production. Tyson's been caught for it, I believe, or spoke about it at least afterwards on his podcast about stealing food.
I know that in George's deep dive he did for Heroes vs. Villains with Shane and Gus, he spoke about how on one night, and this is how him and Matt really bonded, was that one of the producers had left to go to the bathroom, but they left their thing of coffee there, and him and Matt stole it and just started drinking it. Yeah.
Yeah. This is why I like Dolores, because she gets me. There's something fundamentally wrong if you don't like coffee, in my opinion.
I agree. Cheers. I don't dislike it, but it doesn't do anything. I drink it, nothing happens. It doesn't taste like out of this world. It just, it's a thing. I don't get addicted. The only thing I'm addicted to is Survivor. That's it. Yeah. Nothing else.
But also you live in a state where drinking coffee probably isn't the most popular thing to do because it's always very hot.
No, trust me. Like the people here, everyone in like I think this side of Australia is obsessed with coffee. Queensland's no exception.
It was funny at the reward challenge when they all had to get together on the reward challenge and JLP asked them, "Did you guys miss Kelly last night?" And you hear crickets, and then Raymond's the only one saying, "I missed you, Kelly." Yeah, I did. Hey, Kelly, how you doing? Like, absolutely oblivious. The rest of the tribe's like, she could stay there. We're not too worried about that. But yeah, like I said, this would have been the one where they won the toasties, some nice coffee to wash it all down. But then again, I would have been the fool drinking the coffee while Ferris is in the back looking for the idol, doing some work while everybody else is enjoying their second or third cup of coffee out there, Maki. So Ferris does end up, you know, showing us why players who outwork others end up getting more idols. Do you think that we'll hear, like, when Ferris finds his third, his fourth, and his fifth idol, we'll hear the usual complaints from people saying, oh, it's planted for him to get them?
People are already saying that now. Like, I've actually seen online comments, people being like, oh, you know, this game is rigged for, for Ferris and stuff. And, you know, like, the idol was obviously planted right there for him to find, which he didn't even find it straight away. You know, like, he almost had it, but then he backed away, looked around, and then he found it again. So, I don't know. People are just stupid. Like, I recall there was that one article you sent me, Chris, of coffee they're drinking. So, oh,
I actually... So when I was in Samoa, there's a drink there called Coco Samoa, which is apparently like way, way stronger than coffee in terms of like caffeine and everything. And I was on set one day and it tasted really good. So I just like shotted four cups of it back to back to back and literally nothing. It didn't make me like, didn't give me any more energy or anything. I just don't think caffeine affects me at all. I'm dead inside.
It is a thing for some people. It is a thing. Like I love it. But Andrew Lee saying Ferris doing the celebration dance with Raymond. That was quite fun. And this time at least they got it without anybody being close to them. So it would have been a secret in this case if Ferris didn't decide to go the opposite of what most people do and sort of plant the information out there that he's got an idol. But I think this also shows a certain level of confidence going up from Ferris, where he's now like, I found two of these bad boys. I kind of know what I'm looking for. I'll probably find another one, even if I have to play it.
I wonder if it wasn't seasoned coffee, which he said he doesn't care about, and if it was the falafel and hummus, maybe he wouldn't have got, the idol. Yeah. He doesn't care about toasties, but if it was falafel and hummus, maybe it'd be different. But yeah, like, is he going to be the sniffer, the Russell Hands of the season, where he finds idols, like, because he works his butt off, and while people are enjoying rewards, he's out there looking, and maybe he's gonna trip over.
I've said this many a times. I come up for all the players that, like, for instance, your Ben Driebergens, where people are like, oh, Ben had it planted, or your who was the weather reporter guy that
Rick Devens,
you know, yeah, like, there's always these people who outwork others and go and look for them more than other people and find a way to get the idol. So you have to give credit. That is a strategy on its own to be able to do that. So he's outworking them at this point. And that is kind of what is happening in the game. And we're seeing it. He is hungry for power in the game, and he needs it at this point because he needs to make sure that he can counter Kirby's social game. And I think people are going to start looking at him and being like, well, Ferris is the kind of guy who's going to get idols. We're never going to know when he's got them. But he's also not showing them the idol, which breeds that uncertainty at the moment as well. So I don't know if he's going to actually show them what the idol looks like. It's two very different strategies. Like, Mark is playing on the other tribe, probably the best game. Ferris and Kirby are fighting to play the best game at the moment on the Rebels tribe. But, Mark has got a very opposite strategy. Like, he only lets in the two Vs about the idol, and he's playing textbook. This is how you play Survivor 101, where... that is kind of what a Titan would do. They play by the rules. And then you've got Ferris, who's playing the Rebel game here, who's trying different strategies, who's probably trying to play the game, Mucky, like how you would like to play the game if you were out there, causing a bit of chaos, getting people to second-guess themselves.
But I'm just going to say that what Ferris is doing is actually kind of smart, though, right? Because it's a thing where it's like they don't have the numbers to split on him. Obviously, it's a very... even cut straight down the middle sides, right? Where potentially it's like a 5-on-5. And all he's doing is just making sure the votes aren't going to be on him. So best case scenario, he doesn't need to play his idol, right? Let's say they take out like a Raymond, for example. Then it's like, okay, great. He's still in the game with an idol, right? He's not going to waste his idol, right? So I actually think it's smart he's doing that, because then there's a lot of uncertainty in terms of, do we actually want to put votes on him? Because then he could potentially play the idol, right? So I think it's kind of like when Jacques and Island of the Idols wore the idol around his neck, and then he just done like the buttons on his shirt up again, right? It's kind of like he's creating immunity for himself because people are scared to actually put any votes on him. Yeah.
Artie's got a nice question here. Which idol will last the longest, Ferris, Marx, or Winners? And then Jonathan saying Winners. He's the least obvious threat now. We're at the swap. And I almost forgot that Winner had an idol until his bro Nathan was in danger. And we saw him talking in the confessional about, well, sucks to be you, Nathan. I'm voting you out. And it had a little idol icon next to his name to let us know he's got it. I kind of forgot about him, Tomek.
Yeah, no, actually, I forgot as well, which now I think of it, it is kind of, they are going a bit gung-ho with the idols. Like, I think you should always only have one on each, like, camp at all times. And I get the second one was part of, like, a twist, like, with the box. But maybe the box could have had a different kind of advantage. You know, just because...
Yeah, steal a vote.
I think
Australia...
What about a nullifier? Get the nullifier in there.
Oh, we get it, Chris. I think like
what it's a fine take.
Yeah, it's fine to have three idols, but like maybe like at merge, like one from each tribe camp, and then the merge idol as well. But then again, there's so many people left still that I don't think the three idols will matter too much. At least it's not like flipping American Survivor, final five and everyone's got two idols on them, you know.
What did you boys think of Jaden and Winner's strategy here to very easily sort of move away from helping the boy Nathan out at this point? Do you think that there was an opportunity missed here for Winner in the game where maybe he could have kept the number there in his game? Like, is the number more valuable to you in the game at this point than what I guess an idol is? Because we've seen other players in the past get a small minority. I can't think of anybody else than Russell Hans probably at this point for Heroes and Villains, where they were the minority in that tribe, but by playing an idol on someone else, they got more people to jump on and say, well, wow, this alliance will look out for each other. That's the kind of loyalty I want to play with long-term in the game. Was there a move to be made here by Winner?
Yes.
And did he miss an opportunity, Mucky?
Yes. Okay, so here's a move, right? Hear me out, right? So everyone on the Titans absolutely just despises Nathan. They don't want anything to do with him, right?
Yeah.
And I think the other tribe looks as Nathan as like, okay, he is that tribe's challenge beast, right? He's the one who's like really all the physical challenges. If you're going up against Nathan and Jaden, like you're screwed, right? And I think Winner knows once Nathan is gone, it's him or Jaden next.
I agree. He's at the bottom.
And I think he knows he's at the bottom, right? But we did see this episode. The V's wanted to take out Caroline, right? And now, obviously, this also comes to a thing on how much of a big fan is Winner to even potentially think of a move like this. But if I was Winner, for example, and the V's brought up, you know, hey, this potentially take out Caroline, I would have just shown them the idol at that point, be like, yes, let's, you know, confirm this trust, let's lock it in. Because then, you know, if they are going to back out of the vote, so the plan you could make is, hey, well, why don't you just not do your split vote plan? Put your votes onto Nathan. I'll play my idol on him. We'll idol out Caroline. That solves your issue. It creates a lot of trust for us moving forward. It is too risky, but I do think
I would not have thrown my idol. There's nothing preventing them from just voting Winner out. Like, if he does that, like, I don't know. I don't like any kind of scenario where you tell people about your idol unless you absolutely freaking have to. And I don't know if they are the two people that he should be showing that to in the game. I like the fact that he's hiding it, but it could have been a power move where him, Nathan, and Jaden could have had control of where they wanted to vote here, potentially just bring one more person over. I guess they would have still needed one more number to get the vote on whoever they wanted to take out. A bigger question here, though, while we're talking about this, was Mark entertaining the idea, Kahuna, of taking out someone in the middle-aged mafia? Is this a case of Mark potentially showing that he maybe could be prone to overplaying his hand? Because to me, it made absolutely no sense at this point that he was even considering taking Caroline out of the game, because he's so well insulated between the V's and the middle-aged mafia alliance that he would have alienated the rest of the middle-aged mafia by doing that, which gives him less options to work with them. Would he then have needed to work with the boys who he didn't have that strong of an alliance moving forward in the game? Like, ultimately, he didn't follow through, but the fact that he was entertaining it, was it more just for editing purposes, maybe to at least let the V's know that he would consider it, but he wasn't really considering it. The way it was edited, it made it look like he was kind of driving it more than the V's in this moment, and I felt like that wouldn't have been a good thing for his game.
I don't know. I actually thought I like that idea. I like him moving away from the Middle Age Mafia. I would have actually preferred to see he's got V and the two V's.
Loyola and like, Valeria, yep.
Valeria and Villa, they are locked because
right.
One thing you mentioned before about the way Ferris is playing the idol in the rebel way versus the Titan way, and I just thought of this when you said that, right? Ferris, the first idol he got, he said, Garrick, put this in your pocket. Play, look like, back me up on this. And then he did the shirt thing. He pulled it out. Then he goes, I've got an idol. I've got an idol. He's spreading this rumor all about Ferris. Whereas Mark, as soon as he got it, he goes to the V's and says, we have an idol. And they're all talking like we are a collective.
We're a
and
unit.
I think he solidified them incredibly well. And one thing I think we've missed here, as far as the relationship goes, I don't know if it's in the edit, and I'm hoping maybe we get more of it. But although Winner is part of the beach crew that are just always in the water, just hanging out.
Yeah.
Him and Mark had that moment where they speak Thai together. Right. Yes. Mark knows how to speak Thai. And I feel like Winner is smart enough where he did kind of say, he goes, look, Nathan, I wish I could do something, but the writing's kind of on the wall here, mate. Like, even if I save you now, you're kind of done. So he's trying to move. And if Mark can get – Jaden's a big dummy. Like, I love Jaden, but he's clearly doesn't have a lot of strategy going on in this game. Mm. I think Mark can go, I can get these people. I've got the two Vs. If I get Winner – and I get Jaden, who is super easy to manipulate. Super, he'll do whatever I tell him. We saw him in this one go, I don't know, just tell me what to vote. And they're like, vote this. He's like, okay, bye. Like, I feel like Mark can control that. Whereas he's now seen Eden flip out. He's seen Caroline get super paranoid about his own relationships and doing the putting people off with the food thing. You know, and we've also seen the confessions from Caroline saying she's the best, she's running this game, she's going all the way to the end, all that sort of thing. I feel like it might be a safer move for Mark to insulate himself in the other side rather than what is ending up being not as stable in the Middle Age market.
Interesting. Yeah, no, very interesting take. If you bring Jaden and the likes of a Winner in with the two Vs and
they himself, have no home. They've got no loyalty. They've got no one, right? Yeah. Mark can foster that.
Yeah,
and then
I like the move more now that you've talked through your thinking there. One thing that was interesting, they didn't show Winner talking to Mark about this vote at all. It was Eden who was seen as managing that relationship, feeding information through to him. But Eden is still somewhat of a right-hand man to Mark. I don't know if he realizes that Mark is pulling away from him slightly in the game at this point. So there is a lot of complexity to the Titans tribe that I feel like it's harder to follow compared to the Rebels tribe, where the lines seem to be a little bit more clear, where people are kind of falling on that tribe. So it's going to be interesting to see how things play out in this next episode when they do go into a potential swap. That is where we're heading into next. And obviously, hindsight's 2020. You know, having that extra person in the game would have been a good move by Winner if they stayed in the same tribe and maybe they had an extra person there. But it could also be a bad thing if he's trying to foster this relationship with the V's. He's trying to get Mark on his side. So I also like Winner's move in not playing that idol a little bit better. There may be a lot that we're not currently seeing when it comes to his game. Jaden, for me, is someone at this point that I just don't see how he gets to the end and pitch a case to win. Like, I would love to have someone like a Jaden get to the end, sit next to me at a final tribal council, and then take the money from him easily. It would be like stealing candy from a baby at this stage, unless the people on the jury disrespects the game to the degree where they're just like, we're going to vote for Jaden because he's a cool guy, you know?
By the way, Jaden will forever go down in history for saying and screaming on national TV, Eshe, lad. Like, we actually got an Eshe in prime time to Survivor. Yeah. Like, amazing.
Yeah. Artie's saying I missed Eden's movie references this week. We didn't see any of those. Sadly, no sweet Caroline. Definitely, this Caroline is not sweet. She seems to be a little bit harsh on people out there, but seems to be a smart player, but definitely just not as aware of how she's coming across. which is a big problem there. It's just no self-awareness. Jonathan says, if Caroline goes, the Titans are split. Charles Kitty, Eden, Mark Valerio Viola, and Jaden Nathan Winner, and Winner appear closer to Eden in a game sense. Eden's always reaffirming Winner in the game. That's what the editor is showing us. It's kind of what I referred to as well. Jaden is our Keith Nail this season. Lovable guy, but clueless about the game. They're not utilizing him enough yet for me to be like he's Keith Nail level, because Keith Nail was just pure entertainment from start to finish. You call Will Hall will always be stuck in my mind with Keith Nail, but I'm sure if Jaden stays long enough in the game, he's going to have his moment as well. Jaden is a potential merge boot. The Nerds will rule the season. Obviously, famous last words from Nathan before he got voted out was that if I go, you're going to be next, Jaden. You're next on the chopping block at this stage. So I do think it's going to be interesting to see if where Jaden lands, if he actually is used as a tool within that tribe, because both tribes have not been afraid to vote out younger, fitter, stronger people early in the game. That seems to be a theme here this season. So I don't know if he's necessarily going to have safety wherever he lands in the game at this stage. Mucky, you were going to say something.
I was just going to say, you know, coming from Andre, like, this is one of my favorite moments, end of the immunity challenge, where Jaden goes, eat your cupcakes. Like, you know, the challenge. Yeah. Jaden is so much fun. I love Jaden so much. The best. Like, even at Tribal, when they're all talking,
do you like Jaden's gym? Would you have worked out in Jaden's gym? When Mark went to go look for the idol, they had like a bunch of them training in Jaden's gym where he was lifting people and they were doing the jungle gym out there.
Yes, I would love for him to lift me like a bench press. That'd be so funny, Chad,
you may have some competition.
Oh my gosh. But like, I love how in Tribal, and there's something about Jaden, right? If he reaches the end, all he has to do is laugh, because his laugh is so infectious. Like, that's how people want him to win. Yeah, exactly. Like, when he's at Tribal and they talk about the plans, it's just like, oh, I think someone needs to tell me again. And he starts just laughing again.
He's
gonna get his beans and rice. I just started like losing it. It was so funny.
What about Kitty calling him out? Only the people that matter know the plan. When he was like, I don't know the plan, JLP, I don't know what to do. I don't know what's going on. Maybe I need to talk more. And she's like, the people who matter know what's going on. He's like, oh shit. Like,
she just like, and again, it shows you that Kitty's got, like, she's got personality. Like, why are we not seeing this? Like, I even liked it when Caroline was talking to Kitty in this episode about rice rations, this, that. Did you see that Jaden is eating more than what he should? Or not Nathan, and she's like, I didn't really notice it. Or at one point she's like, I don't really care, let people eat what they want to eat. Like, she's actually even like, seems to be a bit more of a chilled version compared to Caroline, even though we see those two hanging out together quite a bit in the game. They do seem somewhat different in their approach to the game, but we just haven't seen enough of Kitty's game, sadly, to know sort of what she's about. Blumini saying, guys, do you believe Ferris will be the right person to be a saboteur instead of Kelly? I think Kelly was the right vote. I think Ferris would have been the right vote if you're a part of Ferris's alliance, but I don't think that, you know, Ferris has got everybody in that tribe united with him and wanting
Ferris
to work with him at this point.
Face, though. Ferris's facial expressions, if he had to sabotage a thing without giving it away, I don't know if he'd be doing that smile thing while like, he'd be almost as bad as the other rebels at throwing a challenge.
The more important question is, if you're playing this game, do you want to be the person that has to go and sabotage the other tribe? Do you want to be selected for that role? Like, because for me, I probably wouldn't want to do that. I wouldn't want the blood on my hands if I was successful afterwards. And people, when we get to the merge, was like, you know what? That time that Chris went there and he had the secret mission, he needed to get you guys to fail, by the way. So he didn't have your back in that moment. You know, a savvy player could use that against you. But then there's the opposite argument to that, where you could do what Akali did, where you don't sabotage, you sit out and you build relationships and you actually let them know, I helped you. So you now have this cross-tribal allegiances that you could potentially work with when it comes to a swap. Kelly really missed out on an opportunity this episode. And someone like Ferris may have been savvy enough to pick that up.
Can I just quickly bring up something that Kelly said as well, which I feel like no one's really talking about, but maybe laughed so hard. She was like, oh yeah, I was doing pretty good on the Rebels. I was in alliance with everyone except for Alex. And then someone goes, well, how come you're here?
Yeah.
Wait, they all voted for you? Every single person voted for you?
Yeah, she was horrible. She had no poker face, no game plan going into that. In any case, that is the end here of this week's coverage of the Australian Survivor Titans versus Rebels Week 2 coverage. I hope you enjoyed it. Please consider subscribing, hitting the like on this video, putting the notification bell on so you can be informed the next time that we do go live. We normally try and do this Thursday evenings over here in Australia. This week ended up being a Friday, but hopefully next week we do get it in on the Thursday. My schedule permitted. It's been a little bit full on at work, which makes it hard sometimes to commit down to anything. But myself and Kahuna will be back tomorrow morning our time, evening over in the US, to talk about The Challenge, the latest episode of season 39. And then next week we'll be back with Traitors US coverage as well as Australian Survivor coverage. So plenty to talk about here on this channel. Please keep an eye out for the content as it drops. But for now, everybody, grab your torches, head back to camp. We'll catch you guys next time. Bye.